through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
This hour of Jake and Stacy is brought to you by Kings Heating and Air. Jake, the offense is all out of sorts for the Seahawks 10 weeks into the season, and it was supposed to be a strength. We're looking right now at a unit that ranks 30th total offense. I know Russell Wilson missed a couple weeks when he was injured, but you've got DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett. You don't have Chris Carson right now, and I don't know when he's coming back based on that press conference Pete Carroll just had. But you have Russell Wilson back. You were shut out last week for the first time since 2011, and right now, again, you are 30th in the league in total offense. What's happening? I thought Shane Waldron was supposed to turn this thing around.
He was. He was supposed to come in and
Why
turn this thing around.
Why did he lie to me?
He didn't lie to you, okay? This is something that I believe that when you're looking at stylistically how this was supposed to match, how it's supposed to marry Russell Wilson's strengths, this offense's strengths, I still believe it has the capability to do that. I still have 100% confidence in Shane Waldron and what he can do. The problem has been that this has just not come together in the form that we thought it would because they have not been in rhythm. And that is the one thing that has really struck me as a big surprise this season as to this offense in terms of its flow, in terms of the way it looks, the way it's being presented. That week one game was a thing of beauty. And that, to me, was exactly what I was hoping would manifest itself with this new change with Shane Waldron. Since that point, you've barely seen this offense look similar in any given game, any particular drive. And they just not have, they just haven't found their identity, what they are going to be rooted in. And I believe there's a ton of factors as to why that is the case. But that to me is the thing that stands out to me over everything else. What stands out to you as you watch?
Well, I want to know what some of those factors are.
Well, okay. So some of the factors is, number one, I think we're very much reacting to this last game and getting shut out for the first time in 10 seasons under Russell Wilson. But I don't, when I watch the film, I look at it and I don't see a terrible plan. I see a quarterback who played arguably his worst football. And I see a quarterback that, coming off of an injury, really struggled to get into the flow of the game. It looked like the game was sped up to him in terms of how he was reacting. Like, honestly, I go back and I watched and obsessively watched that throw, that overthrow to Tyler Lockett, and it's the finger, right? He just doesn't have the feel. Well, I watch it from a mechanical standpoint and a read standpoint, and his footwork was completely different than I've seen him do on that particular type of throw. His body language was very different and was rushing himself as he made that throw. I've never seen him do that on that type of throw, and see him make that errant of a throw in that situation, which tells me is this is a player that is not comfortable in the moment and is trying to force something to happen, even on an easy hitch route. And I saw him, as we all did, horrible interceptions in bad spots when in critical moments where you needed a smart decision, a smart play, and settle for the field goal. Or settle for the checkdown. Hey, pre-snap decisions that he was making that I had never seen him consistently make errors on before, right? So that to me is number one. Okay, let's not automatically say that this offense and Shane Waldron and the whole group is bad based off of that bad performance from a quarterback we all expect more from, number one.
An article from The Ringer by Steven Ruiz who talked about the middle of the field being a huge issue for Russell Wilson, and I've heard that critique before. He said that might be an especially problematic thing for Shane Waldron, who, as a passing game coordinator with the Rams, like to take advantage of that. Do you think that that's been an issue?
Honestly, it's part of Russell's game that you look at and say, if there's things that you can improve upon, it's definitely a fair critique, I would say.
Like a middle of the field, sub 25 yards.
But, I mean, come on. I mean, Russell's also one of the great quarterbacks in this league, and he's performed at an extremely high level playing the way that he has. So I don't view this as a bad marriage between concepts and Russell and all that. I think that the offense has not been rhythmic in terms of their style, in terms of what they want to do. They have not found their footing, and particularly third down has been that big issue and that big problem for them. And then the other side of it is Chris Carson's been out. Chris Carson not having him has been a huge factor for this offense, has been a huge factor in terms of the running game not getting going and how this offense uses the run game to set up everything else in a lot of ways. The naked bootleg game, the play action game, the outside zone schemes that they want to run. I mean, Chris Carson is such a dynamic weapon, and we saw in the Minnesota Vikings game, you know, when given the opportunity to, you know, run those types of things with him, he can be dynamic, he can be special, and he adds another element to the offense. So that has been sorely missing. The other aspect I do look at that has really been troublesome and has made things hard has been the offensive line. The offensive line has not played well. Dwayne Brown, Damian Lewis, the center has been a huge issue. You just changed it with Ethan Posick, who actually had a pretty good game against Green Bay. Gabe Jackson has been inconsistent. Brandon Shell has been in and out of the lineup. Like, it just has not panned out the way that you were hoping it would heading into this season, and that has been a huge issue in both the run game and the passing game.
So why is it that a team like the 49ers, and I understand that there are differences with personnel, like they have a great tight end, a great blocking tight end that they go to a lot, they have a better offensive line on paper, and they have you know, a different scheme. I understand all the basics of that, but I mean, they've lost their starting running backs, and you've seen them make the most of other guys that they've had. I mean, I would include Baltimore with this, who their running back group took a huge hit, and they still remain one of the best running teams, but part of that is what Lamar Jackson's able to do, so I feel it feels unfair to include that. Also, their entire system is built around that.
Yeah.
So looking at a team like San Francisco, why can't Seattle incorporate some of what they're doing?
The other part of it, I would say, in that discussion is when it comes to Kyle Shanahan is that they are very committed to the running game and doing it in unique ways. And that is also part of the way that, you know, they have Kyle Juszczyk, who is a tight end fullback, you know, extraordinaire, who also helps out with the run game. And I would say that they've got the 49ers just simply have a better offensive line as well.
What's the unique way?
But the unique stuff that they do that I was hoping that Shane Waldron would do, and that honestly he did at different times in the Green Bay game that they didn't do enough of, is the pre-snap motions, creating misdirection, being very intentional with how you're using those things to set up your running backs for good looks, to set up your offensive linemen to get into better spots in their double teams and getting to the second level on the linebackers. So that to me is what has stood out about the 49ers run game. But also the other factor has been that they haven't done that every single week. I mean, I think this last week was a unique strategy and idea and saying, hey, we're not going to let Jimmy Garoppolo stand in the pocket and let Von Miller, Aaron Donald, Leonard Floyd, and that entire group try to beat them up in the passing game. So I thought that their plan was very smart. I thought that they were well-equipped to be able to do that with their personnel, and they made it work. So that to me is what stands out in terms of the difference. I just think personnel-wise, I think it's very different for them as well. So that has stood out to me is those three things. And then the other side of it is for Shane Waldron as a first-time play caller. Like let's not pretend also that that Pete Carroll himself has not stepped into the situation and has gotten heavily involved, particularly when Russell Wilson was out. Right, it became very heavy-handed with the way that he wanted the game to be called, how he wanted it to be managed, and all that. So
how might Pete Carroll want things managed differently?
Well, I mean, we knew that going into the Saints game.
No, I mean, how might he want things managed differently? If both guys like running the ball, I know Waldron was a passing game coordinator, a tight ends coach before that, but obviously the Rams also liked utilizing the run.
When you have somebody in your ear telling you how to call the game,
yeah,
you're not able to sit there and think through your plan and how I want to call this, how do I want to set things up, what is my vision in terms of how this game is going to be played out, and instead you're being dictated to in terms of how you should be calling the game. So that is different, and I don't think that is something that is healthy. And that is something that I believe Shane Waldron is working through right now as a first-time play caller. So it's something that you culminate all that together, and you look at this offense, and that's why they're at the bottom, right? They're bottom of total yardage, bottom of in terms of passing yards. They're middle of the pack at best in the run game and in points per game. I mean, you just look at it. It's been a perfect storm of issues that have gone on this season, and hopefully that the second half of the season, starting with Arizona, they can start to become better at establishing that and become better and live up to the promise of what this offense can be, because I fully believe that they can do that. I really, really do.
I'm not trying to trap you in a corner. I'm genuinely interested, and we're going to get to four down territory where I'm also throwing questions at you, but I have so many questions about this in particular, so I hope you don't mind that I'm kind of like throwing them at you constantly. But if you talk about, you know, let's say Pete Carroll, let's say hypothetically Pete Carroll is getting in Shane Waldron's ear, or Pete Carroll is having a say in how they're running the ball. If both coordinator and head coach think, yeah, we'd like to run the ball a little bit more, but maybe they want to do it differently, is the issue the way that someone like, or rather, is the issue the way Pete Carroll wants to do it, or is the issue the personnel, the offensive line, the running backs?
I believe it's all the above. I think it's all an issue. You hired somebody to trust them to do their job and the way that they envision going about it, that offensive staff. And then the other part of it is the fact that your offensive line has not been performing well. I mean, Damian Lewis, to me, it has been a regression this year in terms of his performance and what he's done. He has not transitioned to the left side of that offensive line very well. I also see that not having Chris Carson out there on the field has hurt them. Alex Collins is a fine running back, but as I've said before, he's not the same type of running back as Chris Carson. He isn't going to make muddy situations great. His yards after contact is what makes Chris Carson a special player. Alex Collins is not that type of player. He is a decisive, one-cut guy, and when he hits the hole, he hits it hard, and if it's open, if he has a crease, he can hit it. And it's on the offensive line to be able to do that for him consistently. And it's also when it's working and when it's happening, Shane Waldron's got to stick with it. Shane Waldron has to stay with that running game until defenses stop it, right? And so I think at different times you see him pull away from it too soon. So that to me is something, as you put it all together, there's a lot of factors involved in this. But if your quarterback plays better, if your quarterback and Russell Wilson comes back and he starts to play better and he shakes the cobwebs off of this last game, is able to put that behind him, and you start to be able to identify what you do well and what you should be leaning into, then I truly see the second half of the season, these final eight games, playing out very well. And you look at the schedule itself. After Arizona, you play Washington, whose defense is struggling. You play the Texans. You play the Bears. You look at the schedule, and then you play the Rams. You play the Cardinals. It shows up well for an opportunity for them to find themselves and for them to finish strong.
All right, let's get to four down territory.
This is four down territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Going inside the game with quarterback guru Jake Heaps.
Jake Heaps played in the NFL, played quarterback, was in the room with him, was in the fire. He's really a guru. He really played the game.
First down, Jake. Has the game really passed Pete Carroll by?
Well, I heard a sound here. Cut number seven, Mike Tannenbaum. Going all in on Pete Carroll needing to retire.
I think it's time for Pete to retire. I think the game's passed him by from this standpoint. He gave up two first-round picks for a safety. The game's just played differently. One of the things I love about Nick Saban is Nick went to Alabama. They had very few offensive players drafted early in his tenure. Now they have multiple quarterbacks, Jalen Hurts, Tua, Mac Jones, multiple wide receivers. He's evolved. I don't see Pete Carroll evolving. I would move on from Pete, let him retire.
Guy having a hard time in the background there.
Yeah. Oh, man, he is whistling at everything. Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Has anyone checked on him? Is someone dying in the background?
That man some water.
with Tannenbaum's comments, to answer your original question, has the game passed Pete Carroll by? No, it has not passed him by. Pete Carroll is still a very good head coach who I believe that is showing that with his defensive turnaround this season. But the problem is that, as we've talked about before, what is your philosophy and what is your team reflective of right now? What are the strengths of your team right now, and how are you getting the most out of them versus here's my philosophy and here's what I want to be good at, yet I don't have the pieces to do it, or I'm constantly missing in terms of the acquisitions that I'm making via the draft and via free agency. That, to me, has been a huge issue for this organization, for Pete Carroll, for John Schneider, in terms of having that come to life. And now this is reason why you get people like Mike Tannenbaum looking at that. Now, the second part of the conversation that he points to in Nick Saban and his evolution, you know that I have pointed to that before. And with Bill Belichick as well. Those two showing evolution in the way that they play and them constantly changing based off of the strengths of their roster. He has a point there. But in terms of Pete Carroll and this game passing him by, no. What I think is they've just done a horrible job evaluating and acquiring talent to fit the style of play in which they want, which has exacerbated so many problems for this team over the last 2 to 3 years especially.
Second down. Jake was taking it easy with DS for his snap total in Week 10. The right move.
I don't believe it was. I understand wanting to ease him in, but if he's ready, you got to play him and you got to let him go. Holding him to only 5 snaps in this game when he was heavily needed, I just don't understand that. And especially when you see, Russell Wilson in a situation where they're towards the red zone, they're approaching the red zone, and you see him having to throw a one-on-one go ball to Penny Hart because it was the right decision. It's what the coverage dictated, and that was the right throw. That's not winning football. How is your second-round pick not in that situation? How is he not the third receiver on the field getting that opportunity? So, all right, you try to ease him in. That has to change. That has to change drastically this next week. You need D. Eskridge on the field. You didn't want to go after OBJ more aggressively because the thought process was, hey, we're going to give him an offer. We're going to be in on the discussion. But we also feel comfortable if we lose out because we got D. Eskridge. He's coming back, and we love what he does. Then show it. Show the trust, show the faith, show the belief that he can be that guy, and that means putting him on the field.
Third down. Forgot I turned my mic off. Sorry. What should Washington Huskies fans be cautious of when it comes to their next hire?
Something that I'd be cautious of. It isn't a complete no for me, but be cautious of diving into the Chris Peterson coaching tree. I think that that is a trap. Personally. And it doesn't mean that somebody like Justin Wilcox can't be a good hire for the University of Washington, but that can't be the lead factor and the lead the big reason why he is under consideration or that he eventually gets the job. I know Peterson will be involved in the hiring process and all of that, and I know that he will give sound advice. I know that Chris Peterson isn't just going to look out for his quote-unquote guys. That's not who he is. But that would be something I'm cautious of, because are you just trying to go back to the well of the heyday of what you had recently with Chris Peterson, or are you truly getting the best and brightest mind that can absolutely turn this program around and restart it and put yourself in the best position? And somebody like Justin Wilcox, I even saw on Bruce Feldman's list was Jeff Choate, who was the head coach at Montana State, and now he's the inside linebackers coach for Texas, him being on that list. Only connection, only very much the only reason why he's on that list is because the connection with Chris Peterson. So I don't think Jeff Choate is really in an opportunity to be a legitimate candidate, but I think Justin Wilcox is. And what Justin Wilcox, you could say, hey, I didn't have the support down in Cal. I think that's all very fair. But what are you doing offensively that's going to turn this thing around and be dynamic? And so that would be my one caution to Huskies fans, is be careful of just trying to dip back into that well. Go after the best, brightest mind out there that is going to restart this program, re-jump it, and bring new eyes that is necessary for this team to head in the right direction.
Fourth down. When it comes to the Seahawks addressing the offensive line, what's the heart of the issue?
The heart of the issue is listening to Mark Schlereth honestly talk with Wyman and Bob yesterday. Cut number one, here's what Mark Schlereth had to say about Russ covering up a lot.
And Russell is one of those guys that can cover warts. You tend to not honestly, I think, assess yourself. Or you're like, yeah, we're not good enough there, but our quarterback will cover that up. So let's address something else, you know, and then eventually you ignore it for long enough. And then you look at your team and all of a sudden you're old. You're not explosive. You're not physical.
So I think Mark Schlereth was pointing to a number of different issues with this team across the board. But when he talks about that, what I hear is offensive line. What I hear is offensive line and what has happened and what has transpired for 6 years plus. For 6 years at least, that's been the attitude and the idea around the offensive line is, hey, we don't need to invest as much here. Or we can take on a project like a Luke Jokel or somebody of that nature because Russell Wilson is the ultimate fixer. Russell Wilson is going to get us right. Russell Wilson can put us in good situations or he can make up for it with his legs. And I think that that mindset and that thought process has put them in such a position where now you have an offensive line here that once again is struggling and it did not take a serious look at how to evaluate and how to reevaluate and how to upgrade this group. And I believe that's hurt them as it's pertained to this offseason as it's pertained to this offensive line this season. And it happened also in 2020 when you just signed we were at 19, 20 offensive linemen that they had signed. So it just that approach to me just screams offensive line and where they've been at over the past 6 years.
Hype train coming your way next. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
One of my favorite games we play here on Jake and Stacey. It's called Hype Train. Every single Wednesday, let's head down to the station. Here's how it works. I'm going to read you guys a top trend, a top idea in sports. You tell me whether you're boarding the train or staying at the station. If you're boarding the train, you're buying into the hype. If you're letting it go, you think that's all it is. It's just hype. You're not buying it. You don't believe it. You think it's a passing trend and you're going to let it pass you by. Are you guys ready?
Ready.
Here we
go. Let's go.
We're starting with this one.
Hype train.
It's been a whirlwind few weeks in the NFL. Ton of upsets. Teams we thought would be great, like Kansas City, were bad. Now, maybe good again. But anyways, the Rams just dropped back-to-back games. The Bucks lost to the Washington football team. The Bills, who looked like the best team in the AFC, lost to the Jags in week 9. So, with an extra dose of parity this year, a new favorite has emerged, you guys. They're 8-2 on a 6-game win streak, including wins over the Bills, Chiefs, Rams, and Saints. This is the hype train. Tell me if you're boarding. The Tennessee Titans are the best team in the NFL.
Okay, I'm going to give you a two-part answer on this one because it requires a two-part answer.
All right.
I am getting on this hype train not because I think Tennessee is the best team in the NFL, but I believe they're going to have the best record in the NFL when it's all said and done. You look at the Tennessee Titans right now, 8-2. They're going to play the Texans next. The Patriots are going to be a tough game. Then after that, the Jags, Steelers, 49ers, Dolphins, and Texans again. Man, I mean, where do you see the loss outside of maybe the Patriots game? Steelers could be tough. 49ers certainly played the Rams very tough. But, I mean, I see the Tennessee Titans maybe losing one game down the final stretch here. So I don't believe that they're the best team in the NFL, though. I think there are other teams that are better than them, but my goodness, this has played out extremely favorably to the Tennessee Titans, and it's surprising to see with this team losing Derrick Henry, their best player. But I still believe when push comes to shove that a team like New England is very intriguing. But Baltimore, Buffalo, I just view those
so
teams.
So Titans not as, the best.
I don't think they're the best.
All right, Jake not boarding the train. He says credit to them. I think they're going to continue to play well. Their record will be great, but I'm not buying that they're the best team. Curtis, no one aboard this train yet. Are you boarding the Tennessee Titans are the best team in the NFL?
Oh, we had some premature horn there.
Ah,
oh, that's unfortunate.
That's bad.
Titans best team in the NFL.
Right.
Do I want to get on this train?
No Derrick Henry. But a great defense right now.
I am gonna get on board this train.
Go!
You are.
Let's
hop on. I don't know where I might get off on the next stop.
Yeah, that's
it's
fine.
Quick train ride. But look, the Titans—they're playing better than anybody right now. Mike Lefkoe's Titans bunch—they are rolling 6 in a row. Ryan Tannehill looking like maybe an MVP candidate, which
once again,
is wild
dark horse
to think
MVP
about.
MVP candidate, Ryan Tannehill.
Yeah, and last year the thing that held them back so much was that defense. They seem to have had a little bit of time to figure that out. Now we're what, 8 weeks away from the rest of the regular season here, or from the end of the regular season. A lot can happen. I look at Dallas and the NFC is a very, very intriguing team when we're looking at best teams in the NFL. Boy, a Titans Cowboys Super Bowl, that would be wild to think about. But right now, I feel comfortable saying that the Titans are the best team in the NFL.
Okay.
I am also boarding this train.
You
right
are.
Now, I'm looking at the teams that the Titans beat. They are on a 6-game win streak. Like I said, wins over the Bills, Chiefs, Rams, and Saints, which that's a great defense. And they've done some of that, at least that game against the Rams, without Derrick Henry. We all thought the identity of this team is gone. The strength of this team is gone. And they've proven they're far more balanced than they were last year. And they're just better able to get all this done without Henry. If they were to lose Derrick Henry last year with the defense they had then, I think they crumble. I think they're done. This year, though, they've improved there, not just on that side of the ball, but they've also improved. Ryan Tannehill, like Curtis said, looks great. And honestly, like, I know the Bills have had ugly games. I know the Chiefs have had ugly games, but those are great squads. You beat three teams that are right now, like, permanently part of Super Bowl talks, plus the Saints, great defense that, by the way, beat the Seahawks. Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and say right now you're the best team in the NFL. All right, two aboard this one. Next hype train into the station. Going MLB with this one, specifically the Mariners, who seem like they're willing to spend this offseason, all right? Now, they need an elite infielder and either someone at second or to replace Seager at third. Jerry DePoto says he wants to add two bats. They seem out on Carlos Correa or any other player who wants to stick at shortstop. That leaves Marcus Semien, who can play second base as the best option right now with cash. Pressure mounting from fans, hungry for the playoffs. It's very possible a deal gets done. This is the hype train. Tell me if you're boarding the Mariners land Marcus Semien.
I'm going to get on this hype train. I really believe it's going to happen. I think it's... They have put themselves in a corner on this one when it comes to Marcus Semien. The Giants certainly are someone that I am fearful of in terms of competing with Marcus Semien and his services, but when push comes to shove, I just think that the Mariners are younger. They've got a better outlook for the next few years. And up-and-coming team that Marcus Semien can be can make a big-time splash for. And if you don't win the MVP this year, certainly if you have a season that you had this year or relatively close to it, and the Mariners go to the playoffs, probably winning the MVP. So I think it's a good I think it's a good wagon to hitch yourself to, and that to me is why I think Marcus Semien is eventually going to sign here, because the Mariners are going to outbid the San Francisco Giants.
All right, Jake says yes, he's boarding that train. The hype train is the Mariners land Marcus Semien. Curtis, are you boarding?
With any free agent that is available, money should not be a factor when it comes to the Mariners. Any dollar amount should be fine. You can afford literally any dollar amount that any player asks for in free agency. The real sticking point is that years. We know Jerry DePoto, not a fan of contracts that go beyond about 5-6 years. You know what, Marcus Semien, he might be the kind of player that is worth a contract that is 5 or 6 years deep. And he's got a much longer track record than a lot of these guys in free agency. You know, you look at, and he's stayed healthy
throughout
most of his career. Yeah, he had 45 home runs a year ago. I am going to get on board this train. I think the Mariners do get Marcus Semien. I'm not comfortable with the fact that they have pretty much put all of their all their free agency eggs into the Semien basket. I would much rather have them have a lot of fires going on right now rather than just one big one, because look, if he doesn't sign here, it's a failure of an offseason. That's right, I said
woo! Woo! You guys are going to hate me for this one. I'd love to will it into existence. I'd love to see him here for the Mariners, but I'm not boarding this train.
Oh, come on.
I think
why?
There could be some other contenders here on the West Coast. We talked about, Curtis mentioned earlier, the Giants potentially being in on that one, looking for a shortstop, looking to get back there. It's in the West Coast. It's where he grew up, and I think that the Mariners are going to have to really pay up for guys. Mariners fans might be excited about where this team can go and might be able to see the future, but a lot of free agents can't yet. And they're going to need to either see you pony up a lot of money, which the Mariners might be willing to do, or see you give them a long-term deal, which, like Curtis said, Jerry DePoto probably not willing to do. I just see him signing with a team at 31, which isn't old per se, but at 31 where he thinks he can touch the postseason, get to the postseason, and is maybe a more assured of a visit there.
Oh, ye of little faith.
I know. Sorry. I've been burned before. So I'm going to go this one. I'm playing it safe. All right, next hype train. I'm going to stick with the Mariners here. We have back-to-back Mariners hype trains, you guys. So this one coming into the station, also about shortstop. Now, the Mariners, I mentioned earlier, focusing on Marcus Semien because they've already ruled out a guy like Carlos Correa, not just because he's going to be wildly expensive. He'll probably get the biggest deal out of all of these shortstops, but because Jerry DePoto has assured J.P. Crawford that you're our guy at shortstop. J.P. Crawford, in my humble opinion, was robbed of a Gold Glove Award this year. He has a great glove in the field. The bat is fine. He gets on base. It's okay. He's not a big home run hitter, though. So here's the hype train. Tell me if you're boarding. It's a mistake for the Mariners to be sure of J.P. Crawford at shortstop.
Okay, I'm going
to
say...
Or to refuse to move J.P. Crawford from shortstop.
Right now, I'm going to say no.
I'm not boarding the hype train.
But, TBD on this, because there is a report out there that the Yankees are not interested in going after Carlos Correa. So why is this TBD for me? Because of that news? If you eventually see Carlos Correa go to somebody that is not a blue-blooded, you know, MLB program and organization, like the Yankees, like the Red Sox, like the Dodgers, somebody that really, truly is going to compete and spend some big-time dollars that you know that if you get in a bidding war, you're probably not going to have a great chance against, so why even go for it? If he goes to somebody like, I don't know, like Detroit, the Detroit Tigers or something like that, where the Mariners absolutely could have competed for his services, then I'm going to be mad, then I'm going to be upset, and this whole conversation about keeping J.P. Crawford at short despite having a chance on Carlos Correa, that would be absolutely ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. So right now, I say no because I don't think Carlos Correa is realistic for the Mariners, but I don't know. It looks like it might be.
All right. That was Hype Train. That's every single Wednesday. Right now, we're turning to What I Need to Know, which means it's time for your questions. Any question you want answered, text it right now to the Mac and Jack's text line, 206-421-3776. Your questions, text them right now. They're next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Time for What I Need to Know, brought to you by All Red Heating, Cooling, Electric. Get those questions in to the Mac and Jack's text line, 206-421-3776. We'll start with this one. Hey, I'm going to be at the game. All caps, multiple question marks. Can we stop Murray? Well, we'll see if he plays. His ankle might stop him. But I'm actually feeling better about defense heading into this one than I am about offense, which is shocking because Arizona's offense is solid. But guess what? Their defense, also really great. When we look at those third down statistics and say, the Seahawks have been, you know, third overall in the league since week four and third down, you know who's been like 1-2? Arizona.
Yeah, and that's why this is going to be a greater test. I think the Green Bay game was a better matchup for this Seahawks defense than Arizona is, to be quite honest with you. So if Kyler Murray comes back into it and he isn't clearly hampered by his ankle injury, man, I am going to be very curious to see how this goes. And I do have a lot more faith, like you said, in the defense than I do the offense. As of right now, the offense has a lot to prove. And with that being said as well, it's because the Arizona defense has been playing fantastic. They're number four. They have the number four defense in total yardage. When it comes to passing yards, they're five. The one weak area that they have is rushing defense. And then in points, they are right there towards the top as well. So this is going to be a really interesting test. But also, I'm not walking in this game thinking that the Seahawks are going to get blown out. I actually think this is going to be a very close game. This is going to be a great battle. And if Russell Wilson can, you know, get back to, you know, playing the way that we know he can and shake this last game off and use it as an opportunity to get better and propel himself moving forward. I honestly believe that this is going to be a very, very close game.
Related, next question, is it possible Russell Wilson already peaked and is now on a gradual downhill path? I will say, when you pass, like, as a quarterback, mid to late 30s, mm-hmm. you can start to struggle, but that's not always true. I think what's happening with Wilson is he's made some really weird mistakes. I think that he is a quarterback who is evolving and must also evolve his change of his style of play. So if you can't scramble as much as you used to, then you've got to improve over the middle. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. there has to be a give and a take somewhere.
Yeah.
Or you need to work very closely with your offensive coordinator to say, hey, man, let's figure out how to make life easier for me because I got a great deep ball. You know what I mean? Like, I've got a great yeah. connection with these two receivers. What do we do here?
They've got to find an offense that can mesh all of it together. And
but
I think
no,
that's,
I don't think
that,
he's going downhill.
Yeah, I don't either. I not even the slightest. And I just think that what you found yourself in is you have found yourself in between. You found yourself in between as an organization as to what you want to do. You found yourself in between in terms of the style that you want to play. And right now, you're caught up in that. And here's what I would say, too. A lot of people, and this isn't a direct comp, so I'm sorry. This isn't like the perfect comp here, but just hear me out. When it came to Tom Brady and the Bucks last year, when it came to Tom Brady and the Bucks last year, I'll let that slide, Stacey. But they really struggled to figure out who they wanted to be. And Tom Brady was going into Bruce Arians' offense with Byron Leftwich as the play caller, and they were trying to make Tom Brady go into Byron Leftwich's, you know, or sorry, Bruce Arians' system, and it just didn't work out well for them. Eventually, Tom Brady, Bruce Arians, Byron Leftwich, they sat down and they came together with a plan that would highlight Tom Brady's strengths. And eventually they took off. Now, I'm not saying that exact thing is happening right now, but what I am saying is that Pete Carroll, Shane Waldron, Russell Wilson need to sit down and really identify who this team is going to be offensively, how they're going to go about it moving forward, and stick with it. And that, to me, is something that they have to roll with, because the in-between, we're going to be in between tempo. We're going to be in between Russell Wilson at the line of scrimmage. We're going to be in between wanting to be a dominant running team. We're going to in between in terms of getting Russell Wilson in the shotgun and in empty formations. They're just in between, and you're not going to be successful offensively if you're constantly in between.
What I need to know, this one from the 253, are the Mariners going to disappoint us in the free agency market? Honestly, yeah, I think so. But here's why I say that. I think that most people will feel at the end of the season like it wasn't enough. You didn't get the big star I wanted, because I think it's going to be a lot harder than we collectively realize for Seattle to convince a lot of these guys to play for them. It's not because Seattle isn't a beautiful place or because this team doesn't have an upward trajectory, but there are just other teams that are either huge spenders that you're going to be competing with also on the West Coast, there are just going to be a lot of guys vying for these services, and we know that Jerry DePoto, like Curtis mentioned, Ryan Divish talked about this, isn't open to doing long-term deals, which some of those big names might be looking for. However, I think there is a very good chance that at the end of free agency, you'll look at the roster and say, that's an improved roster.
Mm-hmm.
I think both things are true.
I hope so. But how much of an improvement of this roster are you going to be looking at? And
there's almost nowhere to go but up.
I mean, you could be stagnant. You could stay stagnant. And I that's my one concern, is that you try to convince yourself that we can be smarter than everyone else out there, and we can, you know, go at these low trajectory type of deals, and maybe we can reach everybody's ceiling and get their max potential. I want impact. I want impact players. And that, to me, is going to be the big difference for this organization. Not only that they can win and get themselves in the playoffs, but it also signals a new era of Mariners baseball, a new era of commitment to win. And that is what I'm looking for. That's the signal. That's the sign that I'm looking for from this organization that we all want in this city. So I would be incredibly disappointed if that doesn't happen, and honestly, I believe that it will. One way or another, via trade, via free agency, I do believe that they're going to find that impact.
All right, that'll do it for us today. Thanks so much for tuning in. We appreciate all of you guys, and thanks for those questions for What I Need to Know. Don't go anywhere. Wyman and Bob coming your way next. For Jake Heaps, for Curtis Rogers, I'm Stacey Ross. This has been Jake and Stacey on 710 ESPN Seattle.